Hello and welcome to Lunch with Leon. This is another episode from the northeast of England. And I've been to Beamish, the wonderful site that's full of nostalgia and full of everything that's good about the northeast of England and life in it over the years. It was just tremendous. I was there as a guest on a day when it was closed to the public, and I was really interested to see everything that's going on there. I've not been there for so many years, and it's completely transformed. One of the first things that I did was to go and see their brand new 1950s street, part of the Beamish developments that just keeps on growing. And I talked to Sally Dixon, the Assistant Director of Partnerships and Communications, about it.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to welcome you here today, Leon. And you've got a perfect day for your visit. Sun shining, living spring-like. So the 50s area is part of our Remaking Beamish developments. This has been some £20 million investment into the site. We kicked it off in 2016. It's been in development for a long time, actually. And the key funder is the National Heritage Lottery Fund. And for us, it's all about going back to our founder, Frank Atkinson's vision for the museum. Frank set the museum up, well, he worked towards it across the 60s, and the museum was established in 1970, and it's inspired by the Scandinavian tradition of open-air museums. And he wanted a place in the northeast where families could come in intergenerational groups and reminisce about how life used to be. And when our Edwardian town was first built, that was in living memory. But obviously, we've kind of, things have moved on since then. So we felt it was important to get out there and to kind of to tell the story of the Northeast in the 1950s. So the Welfare Hall opened 2018. That was our first 50s exhibit to open, and it's done really well. So what we do is we work with communities to make sure we get the sort of story of the Northeast accurate, and that's anything from collecting memories, objects, stories about how life used to be at that time. So the 50s Terrace is part of that work. And what you've got there is the fried fish shop, and that's copied from a fish shop in Middleton St George in Darlington. You've got John's Cafe, which is a particular favourite of mine. I love this exhibit. And that's an exact copy of an Italian ice cream parlour in Deep Wingate, so proper deep East Durham. And we collected the marble and mahogany interior in 2013. It literally had not been touched since then. You know, pure Beamish exhibit. And for us, that's thinking about the story of new communities coming to the northeast in the 50s. I think people of Peel will all know about Minchella's ice cream parlours along Shields around there. So, but actually, there was much more to that story than just the Minchella's. There's some Italians in Stanley, where the museum's located. So I've been working with a number of Italian families just to kind of to get the story right. And so you can get your fish and chips, get your ice cream, and you can sit in one of these amazing booths. And we actually kind of had to pull some of the graffiti back, if I can say, because people have been scratching their names on this in TV. And there was some stuff there that wasn't exactly family friendly. So yeah, that's all part of a sort of curatorial journey that we go on as an open air museum. And you've also got Norman Cornish's home and studio. So again, kind of this is quite a powerful one for us. And it's a sort of County Durham answer to the Pittman painters. And we are telling the story of the Spennymoor settlement, not just Cornish himself. And before Norman died, he donated the contents of his home and studio to us. So there's some amazing stuff in there, Leon. There was unfinished work, sketchbooks, his framing machine, all sorts, really. So we've kind of used that collection and the family worked with us and really helped to kind of bring that story to life. So it's about the social history behind the work, not just the work itself. And at the end, this is one that kind of I could do with now and again. It's 1950s hairdressers. So we'll be offering kind of a 50s updo, so you can get a 50s makeover there.
So I get this wonderful feeling that Beamish started out trying to demonstrate to the world what the community was like. Mm-hmm. But I get the overwhelming feeling now it is the community. I mean, this is a big employer and it's a big attraction. Mm-hmm. And it's given life and employment as well as enjoyment and fun to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, that's remarkable.
I think for me, Beamish is part of the social fabric of the Northeast. You know, it's kind of got a place in the region's heart, really. And everyone you bump into here has some sort of Beamish story, whether it's kind of coming on a school trip as a child, or they might have donated an object, or maybe even a building has moved from their community to the museum. So we draw a lot of strength from that. And we've got just under 400 staff, but something we're really proud of, we've got over 500 volunteers, which is amazing. People love giving their time and supporting the museum. So a team of about 1,000 people make this place work. And it's a bit like almost kind of a small town. You think of any trade, you know, we employ that trade on our books, really. We've got folk looking after our transport fleet. We've got our costume team. There's people working in collections, looking after objects. There's people looking after our animals, our gardening team. So it's just such a diversity of trades. It's quite something, really.
And what about skills? I mean, this must be an obvious place for people to learn new and specialist skills, mustn't it?
Absolutely. I think for us, obviously, we look after a lot of things that are old. It's kind of, when it comes to engineering, it's oily rag stuff. So we've run a number of apprenticeships. And for us, it's making sure that, you know, we succession plan, and there's a sort of a stream of new folk coming online who can look after our period vehicles in particular. But it's not just that. I mean, even things like within our building team, we've run painting and decorating apprenticeships. In fact, one apprentice went on to win an award. So that's partnering with FE colleges to make sure that, you know, we're offering opportunity for young people who are growing up in the Northeast. And we're kind of also providing the skills and expertise that the museum needs to look after our many objects.
Well, it must be amazing to live in the catchment area for here, because you can learn a lot of things, surely.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm biased, but I do think that, well, I'm sure Liz would agree that we've got the best job in the world, really. Yeah, it's just such a kind of delight coming to work. I'm almost punching the air thinking, yes, I get to come to work again. But no, it's, you know, but the Northeast is kind of an incredible place. I think not a lot of people know that. And our bid to be UK City of Culture 25 is all about kind of shining light on kind of the amazing asset that we have up here.
Of course, as you know, I was brought up in Anfield Plain. So my old co-op is in your museum, which is wonderful, with the wonderful overhead change-giving system, which I'm sorry we couldn't see operating today, but I remember as a child being absolutely mesmerised.
Next time you come, Leon, you'll see that, I guarantee.
Would do that, thank you. Well, I want to operate it, actually. The thing I remember about it was just being fascinated by the engineering bit of it, because it's a piece of overhead railway carrying, for those people who don't understand, carrying little containers of coins and money and so on. So you would pay the money would go by the overhead system to the cashier. If necessary, the change was issued in the receipt and it would come back, and hopefully there wasn't coins all over the floor. So it was a fundamental part. And so I relate to it very much, because that's a little slice out of my childhood that I can see in action. And when I've tried to describe this to people in the past, they don't know what I'm talking about. Here you can really see it. It comes to life. So everybody that comes here that has any memory from this period in the Northeast will see a slice of something they remember, won't they? I mean,
even kind of walking through the museum, every time I walk through it, I spot something different. I think we're particularly good at attention to detail, and sort of many teams at work that kind of result in kind of what you see as a visitor out on site. But I think why we're special is because it's about being kind of fully immersed in history. It's not about seeing objects behind glass. That's the last thing that we want here, really. It's about kind of sort of what the past smelt like, sounded like, tasted like, all that. It's very immersive. And I think particularly the way we've developed our catering offer, I'm thinking about the ever-popular fish and chip shop in the village at the moment.
But it's not just a fish and chip shop, is it? It's a beef dripping fish and chip
exactly?
shop.
Exactly. No, it's a particularly kind of powerful exhibit.
Lunch with Leon from ITT Hub. Leon Daniels is in the northeast of England, having lively lunches with key stakeholders in the region, including Martin Gilbert at Go Northeast and the amazing team at Beamish Museum. A friendly northeast welcome for Lunch with Leon.
And after Sally told me all about the 50s Street that was new, I thought I'd better go and see it. And there was no better way to go than by bus. So I went and saw Paul Jarman. He's the Assistant Director, Transport Industry and Design here at Beamish. And not only did we see a bus, We took a ride.
This is a 1933 Leyland Cub, operated by Crosville originally. And it joined our working fleet in July 2021. We had it restored. It was a wreck previously. And the reason we went for, obviously, Crosville not being a northeast operator, but for this vehicle was the condition it was in. It was in a barn that had collapsed on it. Most of the bodywork had perished. Mechanically, it was tired. and most of the detailing and so on was missing. So what you might call, well, we've referred to as a well-sweated asset by then. But what we wanted it for was to adapt to fit a wheelchair lift on the back and carry visitors around the site who have accessibility needs at the museum.
This is extraordinary. This must be the oldest wheelchair accessible bus anywhere in the country?
I think it probably is, yeah, and probably one of the few that's an original bus rather than a replica.
What else do we have here at Beamish?
So essentially it's a 400-acre site. It's been here 53 years. We have a 1.5-mile tramway that runs around the site to give you an idea of the sort of scale we're on. And around that circle are various features, such as an Edwardian town. We've got a pit village set in 1913, which is the peak year of coal production in the northeast of England. Obviously in 1914, the major export market of Germany was lost. We operate a substantial transport service in support of the site, with probably something like 25,000 miles a year accumulated by the trams and the same on the buses. So it's a fairly large operation, all contained within the bounds of the museum.
OK, well, shall we go for a ride?
Yes, let's do that.
I do all the time, really, not just transport, so I can tell you a bit about them. I get typecast.
So based on the fact, Paul, we're on the radio, can you describe to people what we're seeing from this lovely bus?
So we're just pulling away from the depot at the museum, which was constructed and opened in 2019. We're on the 1933 Cub, and we're just drawing onto the main circuit road, which, as I mentioned before, is about 1.5 miles in circumference. And you can hear that this is very much an original bus, complete with the gearbox and transmission wine. It's not a replica. It has real gears with real teeth, some of them still left there.
Well, I could have listened to that wonderful whine of the engine and transmission of the Crosville Leyland Cub for as long as anybody. But eventually, we did have to go and look at the 50s street. Here's Paul.
Yeah, you're actually in Edwardian Street, set in the 1950s, which has been recreated here using various features from the region gathered together to create a cohesive group of buildings.
So I'm looking at a fish and chip shop. Is that going to be a real fish and chip shop?
It is indeed, and it's functional. The range is a reproduction based on something you would have seen at the time in the 50s. They'd have been modern because it was gas-fueled, whereas obviously our other chip shops are coal. And the building next to it is John's Cafe from Wingate. Then the artist Norman Cornish's house, which you can see is built from stone in amongst the brick of the terrace. And this is a feature you see around County Durham. And at the end, we have Elizabeth's hairdressers.
Oh, so this is amazing. And this is new, Paul, right? This is new?
Brand new, a week old, a week open.
Well, this is just extraordinary. And even the road surface is legitimate, isn't it?
That's correct, yeah. It's basically to reproduce what would have been a street paved in granite sets that has been tarmacked over in order to achieve a level of modernity.
So what's the plans for the future in this area, Paul?
So we're stood looking at the Prospect Terrace, which is the Edwardian part, and behind us is a palisade fence behind which we'll be building a cinema, and then there'll be a set of Tyneside flats, which were quite a feature of the region. Upstairs, accommodation. Downstairs is a toy shop, which I'm sure will be very popular, especially the 50s period. We can have electric trains and so on. And there'll be an electrical shop with a repair facility as well, which obviously reflects the transition to white goods that was seen domestically in that era. And then beyond that, the road will continue in concrete onto a 50s estate, some of the buildings of which you can see there being erected at the moment.
So the big attraction for people has to be that this is, for people of a certain age, inside their memory. This is something they remember. So this is not like we're looking back in time to the period of the dinosaurs or the 15th century. This 1950s layout is basically what people in their 50s and 60s will still remember very fondly.
That's correct, yeah. And there's a danger of chasing nostalgia and perhaps the Greece view of what the 1950s and so on might have been like. However, when the museum was founded, you think 53 years ago, the Edwardian street that was created then was obviously in living memory at that point. So in the future, maybe we look at the 1980s and always keep moving forward, because the transition is grandparents to the grandchildren, we find, rather than parents to children. So if you want to go for a day out, you might take your grandparents, and it's their memory that's being passed on to their grandchildren.
Very interesting. This looks like we're outside a Northern General bus garage. Is it real?
Well, it's real in that it's in front of us and we can lay our hands on it and touch it. But it is a reconstruction based on a number of depots. Those who look at it carefully enough probably notice there's a bit of a flavour of Midland Red in there as well. But yeah, it's essentially a modular building, and it's dressed as a Northern depot, as you may have found in the sort of 40s and 50s.
Indeed. And that sign over the door looks very authentic.
Because it's real, yes. One of the things with building Beamish, a lot of the structures are essentially a replica or even a new building with the facade of something older. So when you do something like this, you're very keen to find anything original that you can attach to it to give it that kind of atmosphere and that sense of being a real working depot.
Indeed. Well, it looks absolutely brilliant, and I know it evokes a lot of memories from what people call the good old days, although I think we all have a slightly rose-tinted view of maybe the good times but not the bad times. People don't remember the diphtheria and the polio and the smog and everything else that went with it, but it has this beautiful feel, the bus garage, of what it was like, a brick building with a roof on it, amenities for staff, the opportunity obviously for maintenance of the vehicles, and so on. So are we doing real maintenance on the buses in this garage?
Yeah, it feels real because I think it is a real working depot. I mean, the buses, you know, three or four buses leave every day and go into service. There'll usually be one or two entering the workshops or going through their routine inspections. Martin very kindly indulges us visiting his own depots when the vehicles need brake testing and so on, or chassis washing. So, yeah, it's a real depot. And a lot of the fixtures and fittings that are original came from the depot at Stanley, at East Stanley, which closed around the time that this was opening and the new depot at Consett took over those duties.
Brilliant. Paul, this has been absolutely fascinating. Thank you for all your time today.
Our pleasure.
Lunch with Leon. Next stop, Sally Dixon.
After experiencing the 50th Street and the wonderful bus ride on the Leyland Cub, I was back inside and back talking to Sally. And I was really interested to find out what had happened at Beamish during COVID.
I mean, it's been a bit of a bumpy ride, really, I've got to say. So for us, kind of, we are a business that turns over 12 million in a normal year. We've grown significantly over the past 10 years, and we had a record year in 2019 welcoming 804,000 visitors. So we're all, you know, brilliant for the region, brilliant for kind of Stanley where we're located. And 95% of the income we need comes from visitors. That's admissions, it's retail and it's catering. Well, that dropped to zero on 20th of March. So you can imagine a bit of a white knuckle ride, really, on. But as the support packages were announced, we kind of worked through what we needed to do. So it was crisis management at first. And we had over 400 staff on furlough, which I think has got to be a bit of a record, really, for a museum. There was 13 of us running the business. And I've got to say, I wasn't bored. I was one of those 13. So and it wasn't about seniority. It was about kind of role, purpose. We didn't want to have to do that. We couldn't have survived otherwise. So we had to do what was best for the museum. So for me, it was almost like one long funding application. So we've done quite well with cut to recovery funding via DCMS, so but big thanks to them. We secured 970k in the first round and then 585 in the second. Job retention schemes being lifeline. We tried every avenue of support. The CBILS loan scheme, the bounce back loans, we took one of those out. Cash flow support through a bank overdraft. We ran a fundraising campaign. And our partners are brilliant. So, like, big shout out to, like, some sort of, just sort of, you know, support from Go Northeast and, you know, the business community, really. People have sort of stuck by us when we needed them to do so. So, but actually, what we found is we were the kind of the earliest museum to open because we have a fantastic sort of big green site. We're set in over 300 acres. Actually, the museum's perfect for social distancing. We've worked really hard to put COVID secure measures in a way that's sort of like sensitive to the period of the museum. They kind of look and feel a bit Edwardian, actually. So it's all been done, you know, because it could otherwise be quite a sanitised experience, and we're about kind of being fully immersed, engaged in Northeast heritage. So we've thought really hard about look and feel, just to make sure the kind of core and the essence of the experience is as it was, or as close to as it was before the pandemic. So actually we've done all right. I mean, last year, 21-22, we reached 600,000 visitors, and given that we only opened on April 12th, we're really proud of that. So I think there's been pent-up demand within the market. I do think even things like Dominic Cummings coming up has helped to kind of really shine light on, you know, how great. There's a reason why I came to the North East, because it's a great place to be, really. So Barnard Castle has had its best year ever, actually. So I think, you know, we're proud of how we've steered the museum through the pandemic, and even things like it's forced us to kind of dip a whole foot into digital, really. We moved our learning offer online. In fact, we won the Museums and Heritage Award for Pandemic Pivot. I mean, an awful term, but yeah, large organisations. So we beat off Museum of London and the National Army Museum. Little old Beamish steamed in and kind of bagged that award. So yeah, big team effort.
Beamish Museum is really strong on connecting with the community and connecting with business. I went across to see Liz Peart. She's the partnership coordinator for Beamish Museum, and I asked her about their initiative, Business Friends.
Lunch with Leon. Next stop, Liz Peart.
So at the museum, I run the Business Friends scheme, which is an excellent scheme for businesses who are looking to offer their staff something a bit different in terms of a reward. At the museum, we offer corporate passes, and we offer them to small and large businesses. So for large businesses, they can purchase 5 corporate passes, and each pass admits up to 5 people into the museum every day that we're open. And it's just a brilliant offer, really, and there are PR opportunities as well around it, and there are exclusive invitations to opening of exhibits. So one of the exclusive invites, which is particularly exciting for our business partners, is that we invite them into Christmas. Christmas is fantastic at Beamish. We do it really well. The museum is decorated beautifully and looks really magical with sparkling lights, and it's sold to the public as an open event in the evenings, and tickets are sold out very, very quickly within a few hours of going on sale. So for our business partners, they have the opportunity to come into the museum for one of those evenings, and they can bring their families, and we have a visitor in a red suit, which is really lovely and special. And as well, we offer amazing hospitality in terms of our brilliant food and drink. So yes, it's a really, really special event.
So just thinking about the support you get from business. So a long time ago, I worked for a Chinese company, and that Chinese company was the first ever corporate sponsor of the London Transport Museum. So when I took our Chinese chairman to Covent Garden, it took him 30 seconds to decide to sponsor it. In our history are all the answers to our problems of today. So a wonderful Chinese view, that if you study history, then actually the answers of today's problems are self-evident from what we've done in the past. So we might think, mightn't we, that Tesco invented good customer service, but actually we had good customer service in the 1950s in the sorts of shops that you described. So do you get a feeling at all that the business support helps them learn to be good corporate organisations as well?
Most definitely. You know, that's what our business partners love. They feel as if they're giving to the local community. And I think what a lot of people aren't aware of as well is the work that we do in the community, particularly around those in older age who are living in isolation or with dementia. We have a health and wellbeing team who are based here, and a lot of their work they sort of do to groups of older people. So up at our farm, we have Orchard Cottage, and we have activities that are run, and people can immerse themselves completely, remembering back to the days when they were younger. And a lot of businesses feel that by helping us, they're supporting all of that sort of work, which is so vital these days.
Lunch with Leon. Next stop, Beamish Museum.
When I was at Beamish, The team were just waiting to hear the outcome of the shortlist for the UK City of Culture 2025. 2025 is just remarkable. It's a competition, and Durham here in the northeast of England really wanted to be shortlisted. They believe it will spark belief across the county and the communities, just showing what everybody is capable of doing together and also making sure that northeast of England is firmly on the map. People in the north are friendly. They have always a great welcome, and they really have the energy to try the unusual, do the unexpected, and be exceptional. Now, of course, when I spoke to the team, they were waiting on the outcome. We now know that Durham has been shortlisted. So congratulations to the team at Beamish. Congratulations to the northeast of England for being shortlisted for Durham 25. But before they knew the outcome, I talked to Sally Dixon about it.
So County Durham, it's a county-wide thing, is bidding to be UK City of Culture 2025. We are one of 8 places that are longlisted. And this goes back to 2009, actually. We first, in 2009, bidded for the 2013 designation, which went to Londonderry. We weren't ready then, but I think we are now. And as part of that failed bid, the Culture Durham Partnership was set up. That's a grouping of the key cultural organisations across the county, university, cathedral, Bowes Museum, Locomotion, those sort of places, and ourselves. So as part of that partnership commitment, Beamish has been very involved in developing County Durham's bid. So potentially hugely exciting. If you look back to kind of Hull and Coventry, Hull was 2017, so it was Coventry in 21. The investment and profile that comes with this is significant. I think Hull reported about 90 million additional investment, Hull 100 million. A lot of that's been within leisure tourism for Coventry. I just think that the northeast kind of, it's our time. We've gone for this 3 times now, each time been knocked back, and we need that investment profile now more than ever before. So I've been leading on business engagement, and there's been a lot to do in a short space of time because the Tees Valley boroughs were going in for 25 and then stepped back. It's opened the way for County Durham to bid, which is brilliant, but it has meant that we are working accelerated time scale, shall I say. But no, it's been sort of just a huge kind of groundswell of support from across the region. The Chamber of Commerce are behind it, as a Durham Business Group and others. But within the business engagement piece, our friends Go Northeast have been superb. We've put a call out for businesses to get behind and to kind of pledge indicative support, and we've had a really, really good response. We've got 500 businesses signed up to back the bid, and we're hoping to ideally kind of double that by the time the judges come and visit, which I'm sure they will, because the shortlist will be announced on 21st of March. They'll shortlist from 8 places down to 4, and the next step will be visits from Phil Redmond and the judges. So keep your fingers crossed for us, because the Northeast deserves this.
Well, it would be wonderfully timed, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be with you, because you've got the Stockton Stylington bicentenary happening then, which is nationally or internationally significant. And Locomotion will be making a lot of that. They're in Shildon, which is the world's first railway town. And Lumiere will be happening that year. So lots of things happening already that we can kind of amplify and build on. But a great opportunity for us here at Beamish to kind of to benefit from sort of the profile, but the additional visitors, the designation will bring. And we're setting ambitious targets around visitor economy, around creative industries growth, around jobs, and particularly around kind of, you know, placing culture at the heart of driving social change here. There are significant kind of issues within the county that we think culture can help with, like health and well-being, like children and people's mental health, those sort of things. So it's a real chance for us sort of to step up what we do here, but placing culture at the heart. So yeah, we have a good opportunity, and I'm sure we're going to win.
Good, good. We're rooting for you. One of our friends in this podcast is Martin Gilbert, who's in charge at Go Northeast, and he's a participant, listener, and all-round good guy. So sounds to me like Go Northeast has been doing a good job in supporting you.
Oh, we love Go Northeast here at Beamish. We really do. I mean, they're one of our founding business friends. I mean, Liz was talking about the business friends scheme earlier. We start off with 6 partners. So Go Northeast have been with us on that journey from the very start. So big thumbs up. But I think what we love about Go Northeast is they go above and beyond just being sort of basic business friends that are always looking for kind of new ways to collaborate and work with us and support us, which is fantastic. And it's kind of that creative approach to partnership is where you kind of really get the mutual benefit. So these guys are amongst the best at this. So thank you, Martin. And a big shout out to Stephen King as well, who's commercial director there. I mean, you've got a brilliant team. They've supported our lovely bus depot, which we built as part of Remaking Beamish. And this enables us to house our growing transport fleet. But it also enables Go North East to preserve their northern name and to kind of showcase the company's proud heritage in the region of getting people to work and moving folk around. So we can help them do that. So it's been a great example of partnership. We work with the guys there to make sure that folk on low incomes who may not own a car can get to the museum. We're perhaps not the most accessible. So we support bus routes actually into the museum. Again, kind of that's core to what we're all about. It. We've got to be accessible. And for us, really important to make sure that, you know, you can come to Beamish from whatever background or walk of life you're from. You know, we are accessible and welcoming. And we are easy to get to. So that's great. And they've liveried buses as well. There's a northern bus out and about that is just like one of the buses in our collection. It's a bit of an optical illusion, actually. But I think we've also worked with you guys on our dementia-friendly work as well. And we're actually a dementia-friendly community here. All our staff and volunteers are dementia-friendly trained. And we've been supporting Steve and the team to kind of work with bus drivers to make sure your guys sort of know kind of how to work with and just how to respond to kind of folk who access your bus services who might have dementia. So again, it's sort of once you kind of get going with the partnership, it's looking at where the connections are. It's always more that you can do, really. But I can't thank the team enough for supporting us. They've been absolutely brilliant. So a big shout out to Martin and Stephen and Go North East.
So now the coronavirus is over, really, for all intents and purposes. So what's your message for everybody who listens to this particular programme? What's your message from Beamish?
This corner of the Northeast is an extraordinary place in the world. It really is. And there's no better way to kind of have an induction to it than visiting Beamish Museum, really. So just an appeal to kind of everybody out there, whether you're local, national, international, please come and visit us because it's a world-class experience. It really is kind of, it's powerful. It's difficult to get across here, but it's one that you have to come and experience. It's just quite breathtaking. You walk to our entrance building and you see the site. It's a bowl-shaped site opening out in front of you. You just think, wow, look at the scale of that. So,
and Sally, give us the website details.
www.beamish.org.uk.
So Liz and Sally, thank you very much indeed. I've had an amazing trip here today. I've been privileged to see behind the scenes. I've been privileged to be here on a day when we're not open to the public. So I'm definitely going to come back on a public day because I want to feel the atmosphere that you've described. It's probably 25, 30 years since I was here last. So I promise not to leave it every 25 years because that won't be very often. So definitely be back here to see you. I'm looking forward to the fish and chips. I'm looking forward to the smells and the sounds and talking to the volunteers, and I think seeing all the smiles on all of the faces of the people as they're here.
It's been like so wonderful to welcome you to the museum, and please come back as soon as you can.
Sally and Liz, thank you very much.